Our goal this year, has been stated since January, is the phrase light the rock, meaning Glen Rock. And lighting that rock through prayer, through service, through love, and through truth. That has been the goal. How do we as a church connect with Glen Rock and do so through prayer, service, love, and truth? The kind of tagline that we've been using this whole year is that the church may know Glen Rock and Glen Rock know the church. And it's been a great year, at least for me. Let me put it that way. I cannot speak for all of you. But I do believe that with the guidance of our elders and the push of this theme, I have tried to get to know the people of Glen Rock on a more personal level than I have in the other 3.5 years that I have been here. So this has been a very, very good thing for me. It's really opened my eyes to a lot of things. There's some drawbacks, though, when it comes to what we would call evangelism. And one of the drawbacks is many saved people don't hang out with unsaved people. It is truly hard to evangelize only saved people. It just is, okay? So by not hanging out with someone who is not right with God, who doesn't have a covenant relationship with God, who hasn't been brought into that community of faith where they can grow and learn it deeper, that only happens when we decide I'm going to connect with people who are unsaved or at least what I would say unchurched. Another issue is too many times, and I know it sounds a little harsh, too many times saved people don't look a whole lot different than unsaved people, okay? And so our words, our actions, the way we communicate through social media, whatever the case is, we don't really have a distinctive look to us. So when the world looks at saved people, they would say, well, they're just like me. Well, if that's the case, then I'm saved. So I've got a problem that I need to try to figure out. How can I hang out with people who are either not connected to Jesus Christ or have not been connected with a family of God that brings them into a deeper relationship with Jesus? And how can I do that in a way that I am still distinctive to where they look at me and they say, you are not like me. We think differently. We talk differently. We act differently. You have a differentness, to use a King James word, a peculiarity about you. One of the things Jesus was accused of is that he liked to party. And there is a situation concerning John the Baptist and sent some disciples and Jesus kind of has a message and sends it back. And Jesus now is with this crowd of people, and he begins to talk about John the Baptist and how really this guy is a great person, but there's still some things that he was unable to accomplish. But as he talks about John the Baptist, he makes this distinction between them. And not that one is right and one is wrong. That's not where he's going. What he's saying is he quotes a proverb that says, we played the flute, but you did not dance. What Jesus is saying is, you've tried to manipulate the conditions around which John or myself have been trying to communicate about the kingdom of God, and we're not doing it the way you think we should do it. So we're not dancing to your music. And then he concludes when he comes to this section here in Matthew 11. He concludes with these words in verses 18 and 19. He says, for John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say he has a demon. Okay, so there we are on one side. Okay, he doesn't eat or drink. Now, obviously he eats, but you get where they're going with it. There, now we have the other side. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, look at him. He's a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. And then his closing statement is, yet wisdom is justified by her deeds. How did Jesus do what he did? How is it that Jesus hung out with the tax collectors and sinners? Now, I know that's not all of who he hung out with, but that's what is thrown out against him as an accusation. That his friends are, the people that he enjoys being around are. Well, I will tell you, there are people I enjoy being around, and there are people that I just am around. And we'll leave out the word enjoy. Okay? And part of it is their mannerisms, their way of doing life. And Jesus makes this statement, this is what people say. They say that the Son of Man is a glutton and a drunkard. Why? Because he hangs out with people who probably were drunkens and gluttons. He knew how to hang out with somebody, but yet not become that person. Okay? And that is difficult for us to do, because we are cautious. And I get it, especially with our children and younger adults. We are cautious around who do you choose as friends? Who are you hanging out with? I'm a parent of four kids. They're all grown and married, but I've been a parent, how's that, of four kids. And I've got grandkids. And I want them to hang out with the right people, because I know what it's like when you hang out with the wrong people. So how do you reconcile that with this? Here's where I get to. I believe if I want someone to be saved, I have to first believe they are unsaved. Okay, if I don't even start there, then who cares? Okay. Secondly, I need to spend time enough with that person that they know and respect who I am, that they see the difference between us, but they never doubt that I care about them. There is a young girl who became a Christian over in a mission field, talking to the missionary. I was talking with the missionary. Anyway, he said he did not realize how much this was important. This girl became a Christian, and she made the statement to him, you know every bad thing about me, but you still love me. And that's the part I have never figured out. See, I think part of our problem is we know a lot of bad things about people, and so we stand in the judgment of those bad things about people. And now I'm never going to reach out to them, because I've convinced myself in my head they're a bad person. Not, they're a soul that needs Jesus Christ. And I need to befriend them. I need to get into a relationship with them to help them see the same God that I love and adore, and the Jesus that changes lives and lifts us up from pit. And brings to us and gives to us peace and mercy and grace and love and a community of people who will walk with us in our good days and in our bad days. That's only going to happen when I learn to hang out with the people that I have always told my kids don't hang out with. And that's the issue. How do you do that effectively? As we've been walking through 1 Thessalonians, I want to pick out a passage from chapter 4 this week. And I want to start in verse 9. And I'm going to read the text and we're going to just kind of walk through this and see what God gives us as a statement here. Beginning with verse 9. Now concerning brotherly love, you have no need for anyone to write to you. For you yourselves have been taught by God to love one another. For that indeed is what you are doing to all the brothers throughout Macedonia. Look at this. But we urge you, brothers, to do this more and more, and to aspire to live quietly, and to mind your own affairs, and to work, and to work with your hands as we instructed you, so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent on no one. So that's the text. We're going to just walk through this kind of verse or section by section because there are four things that God brings out to us. The first one is found in verse 10. I want you to come back to verse 10. And he starts it in verse 9. You know, you don't have any need for us to tell you again that you need to love anybody. But look at the ending of verse 10. But we urge you, brothers, to do this, that is loving, more and more. Not just love, but love more and more. It is easier to love somebody you are around frequently. Okay? And we see that in our own lives. You probably have had friends that you grew up with that are not around you, that live in different places. There is nothing wrong with the friendship, but because you're not around them, there's a lack of some connection there. You just don't see them that often. Maybe you send a text or an email once in a while, or you see them on Facebook or whatever the case may be. But the people you live life with every day, their issues, their burdens, their problems, their joys, they are much more impactful on your life. Paul challenges this church. He says, concerning this brotherly love, you don't need for us to write to you. For you yourselves have been taught by God to love one another. Indeed that, and I love the phrase, indeed that is what you are doing to all the brothers throughout Macedonia. He did not say to all the brothers in Thessalonica. Did you catch that? So let me ask you a question. Do you really care about the church in Hanover? Do you really care about a church in York? Do you care about churches in South Central Pennsylvania, the brothers and sisters there? Down in Baltimore? The entire United States? Around the world? Loving people who are not next to me all the time is more difficult. And the challenge, he says, is I want you to love these, and in his case, brothers throughout Macedonia, more and more. Why? Because the church is bigger than just us. That's the why. I love when we have people who come and share with us about mission works, about different activities that are going on, whether Chris has shared with us about Camp Manitoni, a great thing that is going on, whether we've had people come from Potter Children's Home and share with us about that work that is doing. We took a look at a possible new mission work down in Honduras that we're considering at kind of an email went out to say, kind of get to know that a little better to see whether that's something we can have some buy-in into. What we're saying is we agree that we need to see bigger than just us. The church is much bigger than just us. And I think the world needs to see that. Because part of the problem, I think, unsaved people or those who live, who are outsiders that he uses in this phrase, is when they get this feeling, oh, you think you're the only ones going to heaven, don't you? I'm sure you've never heard that phrase. I have. Okay. But the whole idea behind that is there's a separation between us. And you think you've got it all together. You've got all the right doctrine. You've got all the right stuff. You worship in the right way. You got the best preacher. Just throwing that one out there. You got really good elders. And you think, Paul comes back to challenge that and say, I want you to love. I want you to love more and more and to see a bigger picture. And he does that. He does that by giving us the example himself. Now, we recall Jesus saying that the world will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. But God's teaching was personal. It is more than just a command throughout the Old Testament to the Jewish people to love your neighbor as yourself. That's true. That's good. But it was more than just that. And it was more than just a command within the New Testament for let love, brotherly love continue and to increase. It is more than a command. And why is it more than a command? Because the verse that smacks me more than anything else around this is Romans 5, verse 8. But God shows his love to us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. God has always loved me, even when I didn't love him. And that's hard for me to accept. Because nobody loves like that. But Paul says you learned from God. You were taught by God to love one another. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Do you love that way? Loving the unlovable is never an easy thing. But for the sake of time, let's go on to chapter verse 11. And I'm going to just one section out of verse 11. We're going to walk through each of these four things. So we got love more and more. The second thing is aspire to live quietly. That is difficult for me because I am a talker. And the beauty is I am paid to be a talker. So talking is fairly easy for me. But this word is aspire, make it your ambition, make it your goal to live quietly. That word is quietly is not used very often in Scripture, by the way, and it really carries with the idea of to cease, to keep quiet, to be still. I'm going to give you a Jeffrey vernacular again. I do that frequently because it's the best way I know how, because I speak to me. Just because you have an opinion doesn't mean you have to express it. You have an opinion. Wonderful. No problem. It's your opinion. Doesn't mean you have to express it. Learning to live quietly is actually learning to live with your mouth shut. How many of us are willing to do that one? I get paid to talk. Okay. This idea of aspire to live is not a separation from the world. That's not what he is saying. What he is saying is seek to live a life that doesn't draw negative attention by your words or your actions. That's what he is saying. Don't make your life become the ridicule of Jesus Christ. Live a quiet life. Romans 12, verse 8, if possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. James says, be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. There is something that is said for the person that learns how to control their tongue. Okay? And I know James says it's untamable. But he doesn't say don't strive for it. And he doesn't say, let it loose. Living a quiet life. one is respectful of the other person. You become a hearer. So if we're doing this to live properly before outsiders, if that's the theme of what Paul is bringing out here, then my love and my quietness is trying to say, you have value to me. Can I hear your story? What's going on with your life? And it's closely tied to the next one here again in verse 11, but the next phrase, mind your own affairs. I know our way of saying this, mind your own business. Okay. Love more, live quietly, mind your own work, your own affairs, your own business. That is the teaching that is going on here. It is, you don't have to meddle in everybody else's life. Okay, you don't have to do that. It's one thing to say, I'm going to teach a person how to fish so that they can eat for a lifetime. Good, I understand that. I know that's not meddling. That's not what he's talking about here. He's talking about you don't have to get in and you don't have to judge their way of doing life when it is not counter to God. Okay? If it's counter to God, we need to have the conversation. We need to have that as a conversation. But there are many things that are an opinion, and there are many times you can do different things differently. They're both okay. And even sometimes you might be able to do it better than the other person. But you know what? It's okay for them to fail. At what point in time do you stop holding your little child's hand so that they can learn how to walk on their own? When do you take off the training wheels on the bicycle? It's not that you can't even do something better. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is you've got to learn that balance of doing your own thing and then letting somebody else do their thing. I'll just go ahead and step on toes because it steps on mine. But you know where the problem is in churches? Is we want to tell everybody else how to do their ministry. Or we're going to make a judgment call on whether their ministry is as good as my ministry. And I come back to this and say, if my goal is I want to walk properly, I want to live before outsiders in a way that they can respect me, then I've got to learn to say it's okay for you to do something your way, even though it's not mine. And for some of us who are control freaks, that's more difficult than you think. Because you really do believe your way is the right way. You actually think that in your, you may not. I may think that in my head. And Paul comes back to this church and says, Jeffrey, you need to learn to mind your own business once in a while. You don't have to be up in everybody else's. It's okay to let them learn to walk. Give them that opportunity to do that. And then we close with the last statement here in verse 11 and 12. He calls upon them to work with their own hands. And then the ending of verse 12, be dependent on no one. Again, Jeffrey's vernacular, don't be a mooch. And I know that that's not a Pauline phrase, but I do think it is a godly teaching. I need to learn how to bear my own burdens. And at the same time, I need to bear the burdens of others. Go back to Galatians 6, okay? We've got loads and we've got burdens and we've got bearing, and it's not always easy to learn how to do both of those. But there is a calling for me to learn how to do my own work. A good work ethic really is a testimony of our character, and our character is a testimony of God. So when someone sees your character and sees, okay, you're trying. And here's the thing. We know generally speaking, we make assumptions, let me put it that way. When someone is really trying and just needs a leg up, now I'm not a horseman, but I think that's where the phrase comes from, okay? They just need a helping hand. And someone who is sitting there with their hand out. We know the difference generally in our head. And Paul says, look, if you're wanting to do this to live properly before outsiders, then you need to be people with a good work ethic. People who know how to live, how to take care of themselves, to not be dependent upon others. Paul made a personal example of that in his own life. Look at the ministry of Paul. And it really gets very personal because I'm a paid preacher. But look at the ministry of Paul. When Paul did his mission work, he did not charge the people that he was teaching. Do you know where he got his money from? It was the people that he taught. Pay it forward, I guess, is the idea that was going there. Okay? So Paul didn't come to Thessalonica with his hands out, saying, if you want to learn about Jesus, give me your money and I'll tell you about Jesus. That's not the way he did it. If need be, if he didn't have financial support from other Christians, then he would do what his trade was as a tent maker, as a person who could work with leather, or as a person who could work with his hands, and he would go and he would do that work. In fact, that's how he met Aquila and Priscilla, because they had the same type of occupation. And so when they're in Corinth, they were doing some work together, they realized, hey, we're both Christians. This is pretty neat. And they built a good relationship with one another. Paul's statement is, I don't want to rely upon others as a way of manipulating the grace of Jesus Christ. Because one of the things, and I'll kind of close with it, one of the things that people fear is all the church wants is my money. Again, you may have never heard that before. But it is a fear that unsaved or unchurched people have. The only reason they want me to go to that church is to open up my pocketbook. Paul says, I don't want that as my reputation. That's not how I want to be as the one who shares the gospel of Jesus Christ. Does he teach the need to be a good giver? Absolutely he does. But what he does is he says, let me just tell you, I want you to love more. I really want you to live a quiet life. I want you to mind your own business. And I don't want you to become a leech off of other people. Learn how to walk. And when you do that, the world looks at you differently. They begin to say, why are you the way you are? There has been nothing new said in this sermon. Nothing at all. It is totally about encouraging us. Encouraging us to restore, to revive, to renew our spirit and ourself. To live as disciples before those who are unsaved and those who are unconnected to God through a church family. And to say, how do I gain their respect? And he just gives four simple ways of doing that. So how can we help you? How can you help me? How do we help you restore your spirit, revive you from within? Because until you are excited about your faith, you're sure not going to want to share that with somebody else. If we can help you to renew that zeal, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?